Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Okay, this is Greenhorns Radio, radio for young farmers by young farmers. Today on the show, we're continuing in our Alaska addiction with Allie Barker from Chickaloon Farm. Hello, Allie.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm okay. I'm in the San Juan Islands at the Orchids Food Co-op. It's very beautiful. We just had an ag summit. There were lots of happy people, and everyone was talking about land succession and access and stewardship. And then it rained so much and the water flowed everywhere and everybody was wet and happy. How about you? How's things over there?
Things are pretty good here at Chugach Farm. Yeah, we're just getting the sun back, and it's popping out behind the mountain and getting a few hours in the morning and 3 or 4 hours in the afternoon. So every day we're getting more light and starting to plan for the season and ramp up for things to come.
Oh, dear, I got the name wrong, and I think I got the name of your farm wrong in the article that I wrote that included you in it, and I guess I'm going to have to go clickety-clack back and change it. Will you give a little introduction of yourself and your farm operation?
Sure. So my name's Allie Barker, and my husband and I run Chugach Farm in Chickaloon, Alaska, in the heart of the Matanuska Valley. We are located between the Talkeetna Mountains and the Chugach Mountains along the Matanuska River. And we're kind of on an old glacier moraines and eskers and some fertile land that's pretty rocky too, but we've created this small-scale organic farm homestead over the years that we started in around 2002-03, started growing then, and it has grown and evolved into more of now we're selling at the, we've been selling at the local farmers market, actually in Anchorage, so almost 2 hours away, and we've had a CSA, and then we also started up a community supported ferments program, and we do a lot of other things, but that's kind of the gist of it.
Well, I came and visited, and it was so amazing, and scarred me for life of what an amazing wild and woolly adventure can still be had less than 2 hours away from the capital of an American city. And maybe you can talk about what brought you to this place and kind of how you evolved into being a homesteader.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of things. Really, a lot of it for me was, I think, growing up at an early age, we grew a lot of food, and I was really interested in that, and grew up actually in Ohio, and there were a lot of Amish folks around, and then I went and studied agriculture in Costa Rica, and was studying the feasibility of organic agriculture down there, and then ended up working on farms in upstate New York, and went to Evergreen State College and studied sustainable ag, alternative energy, herbal medicine there. And I had always wanted to come to Alaska, and I think I had more of the kind of independent, self-sufficient interest, and just wanted to buy land and grow food and build, and so we started doing that, and I was mountain guiding at the time, and there was just at a kind of a critical point where I wanted to transition and grow more food and make more of a living doing it, and so we just started making changes and made that happen.
And you guys built your own, well, you built your own everything. When you got on the land, was it raw forest? Like, and what did you do first? Because I know you built, well, yeah, what did you build first?
Yeah, it's, sorry, it's kind of hard to hear you.
I know, it's because it's a grassroots radio and they don't have the right equipment and just have to invent it.
We can work with that. Yeah, there was nothing here when we bought the land, and you know, we just wrote letters to landowners, and you know, I did that for 3 years, and eventually the woman wrote back and said, hey, sure, I'll sell you that land. And it was raw land. Some of it had been, some trees had been cut maybe a decade before, so there was second growth. But no, mostly it's a spruce and birch, cottonwood forest. And so we've built everything for the main part with a chainsaw mill and some tools, and started building our little 8x12 cabin initially, and then we dug a root cellar next to it and then rolled it over on top of it. And then we built a pole barn and shed and a root cellar and a seed starting house and a Earthship style greenhouse and a Scribe Fit Log sauna. And so there's been a big evolution over time and of different structures and just kind of learning how to do it all. And you know, we're off the grid completely, so everything's run on solar, and that's been interesting and exciting to learn how to do all of that and run a farm that way over the years.
Yeah, I was super impressed and inspired by your greenhouse and all the systems that you had in place there, and just the, like, well, how, you know, it was it's DIY and it's very advanced DIY, but also it's very original and very beautiful. Will you explain some of the design principles that went in and what you did with your greenhouse?
Yeah, the greenhouse in particular was we actually got a partial grant from the Division of Ag for an innovative Alaska grant. And the idea was, you know, we do things a lot differently on our farm than a lot of other places that we've seen. One, because we're so small and off-grid, but we wanted to use less power and just build an energy-efficient greenhouse space. So we built our structure into the earth, so the whole north side is buried and partially on the east and west, and then we have the south face is all triple wall polycarbonate, and the roof is really insulated, and inside we have radiant floor heat that runs off of the wood stove. So when the wood stove is going, water is going around the wood stove and into the beds. So it's also helping to heat the beds, and then that mass helps to hold the heat in the structure. And then we also have an earth oven that we built in the corner of the structure, and it's kind of a multi-use building. Is, you know, that's one of the principles that we've tried to continue with everything, is that everything we build has multiple uses and multiple purposes, And, you know, because we don't grow with lights, we don't start any of our plants with lights, the orientation to the sun and how we do that has been really critical to succeeding.
And how did you go about the process of, you know, tackling the systems? Like, did you have any mechanical training or especially for people who might feel mechanically not so powerful? You guys have adapted a lot of materials and, like, junk material and your beautiful, like, screw-on lids that you had, and you just figured it out?
Yeah. I would say for the most part we just figured it out. Yeah, that's a lot of it. You know, I think that it's interesting because when people come here, we do these permaculture tours every year, and folks are always wanting to come here and check stuff out, and they always say, well, how could I possibly do that? I don't have any of those skills. And I always say, well, we didn't have the skills. I mean, we learned certain things throughout the years, but really it's about talking to people and trying something and it failing or breaking and not working and doing it differently next time, or you know, reading manuals to fall asleep in bed at night, and reading Acres magazines and you know, YouTube when we did get the internet, and you know, stuff like that. And yeah, gathering materials, and you know, some of our mottos have been you know, just to always have more time than money, and so by doing that we have the space to create and to figure things out and to problem solve, and that's been really useful for us. And I always tell people there's no reason why anyone can't do this. It just takes a lot of persistence and hard work and time and a desire to work harder than you could ever imagine, but also have those rewards. And that's really, you know, what it's all about.
So let's talk about the working hard, and maybe a little bit, when we were there together, you had some economic theory about how you wanted to control your work, your hours, your time, and the role of the marketplace in your life and the role of the wild. And, you know, people who aren't having as direct access to the wild, both in terms of profession, like being able to get paid to be in the wild and also to be able to subsist more out of the wild, don't have that place that you have. So I felt like that would be something I'd love to hear you reflect on.
Yeah, that's a good point you bring up. And I think what you're talking about is it's more of a philosophy kind of for the way that we're doing things here. And that is that staying small is important to us, and the reason is with anything in life, if you put too much on your plate, you're going to have to start to sacrifice something, and, you know, that's always the challenge. And so for us, it's really important to balance not only growing food and making a living, but also the subsistence aspects, which is why we started what we're doing in the beginning. So to me, if we're too busy to be able to go out and dip net and fish in the summertime for our winter food, or go moose or caribou hunting in the fall, or pick berries all fall and pick our roots and wild plants, then to me we're doing something wrong, because it's really about that entire balance. And if I'm just growing food and selling it and then would have to go to the grocery store in the winter, that's kind of a failure to me. So for me, it's about providing for ourselves and all these different aspects, hunt, fish, gather, grow, everything we need, provide for, you know, our family, people who are working here, and then be able to sell to the restaurants, the market, do our other programs to make enough income to get by. But constantly trying to reevaluate, are we still getting out and doing those things that we need to do? And it's a struggle. It's challenging to, you know, get the weeding in and the watering, and, you know, with the droughts we've been having in the spring, and be able to get out to fish or hunt or whatever that is, but making sure that all continues to happen.
So when I was there, I also saw a lot of signs for signs about the mining. I wonder if you could reflect on, you know, what's the community like out there in your Chicoloon Hills, and what is this challenge of this big mining company doing in the town, and how do you relate to that from your homestead?
Well, it's been a real challenge over the years. Like any state, you know, Alaska is very resource-based, and unfortunately they value extractive resource industries instead of the type that we support and promote, and you know, growing food and alternative energy and those sorts of things. And so it's been a love-hate relationship. Alaska can be a really tough place, and we've lost a lot of farmer friends because of that, because they just want to go somewhere where the networking and the infrastructure is set up and it's a little easier. In Chicoloon in particular, we have a mixed community, but it is an older community. We're really the younger working folks, and a lot of people here are retired and but our community in general has been against mining, but we're a more low middle income community, and I would say most folks here, as in most rural parts of Alaska, grow a lot of their own food and hunt and fish, and so you know, in terms of the actual mining, I mean, we're fortunate right now we're not directly fighting the large-scale coal strip mine that they wanted to build here in Chicoloon, because, you know, the oil, barrel of oil is pretty low and the market is crashing. But and that's been really, actually really good for us to be able to reevaluate what other... How can we have a different vision, and what do we want to do with the land around us? Because the Matanuska Valley that we live in, currently there's something like 40 or 50,000 acres of land leased for coal leases currently. So it's a constant struggle, and, you know, we're always working on that paradigm shift and trying to kind of educate and create alternatives that are healthier for everyone.
So, this healthier for everyone is a good start, and healthier for you. I mean, I looked around at that homestead, and you guys are, you know, pretty friggin' hardcore out there. And I wonder, you know, that is one of the questions that I face in, you know, talking about the young farmers up and down and here and there, and especially in the conversations about land access, is, you know, can these young farmers make it over the long term? And, you know, how do their bodies handle it? How do their economics handle it? You know, when so many of our systems, our economic systems that value labor so low and food so low and natural resources in general so low, you know, how do people hack it over the long term? Now, you guys started out being, like, stronger than the average bear. How are you guys relating to your endurance and stamina in as you're coming into, this is, like, year 8 or something? No, this is year 12?
Yeah, right, something like that. it's a good question, and... I think, you know, it's interesting because I think starting all of this and coming out of college, I was just really independent and thought, oh, I can do it all on my own. And you know, you do it for a while and then you realize, wow, we kind of feel really alone out here doing what we're doing, and we're lacking that community and that support, at least to the extent that we'd like to see. And I think there's a lot of potential for young farmers or young homesteaders or young creators and visionaries and people in Alaska to do so many amazing things. And we have a really hard time finding them. And I don't think that we're very good at sustaining our energy level. We just work all day every day, and it's ironic that it's supposed to be the simple and sustainable lifestyle, because we do ask ourselves that: how sustainable is it really? How long can you do this? And I don't know. I mean, I'm surely not ready to quit, and I don't think I ever will. But we do need to find some alternatives, and I think some of that is, you know, we want to. Go ahead.
We were there together. You were talking about how there's opportunity for other people to come out there too, and that it might be cooler if there were more people.
Yeah, I think it would be awesome if there were more people. And you know, I keep thinking, where are these young farmers who are looking for land or a place to do something or create their dreams and see it through? And why don't they come here? And you know, we don't have a ton of land, but man, we've been creative with the land that we have. And there is, you know, if you're the persistent, determined type who wants to provide for themselves and also create, has ideas to be part of a community and wants to work cooperatively, I mean, there's so many opportunities here. And, you know, if I were 20 again, like I was when I came to Alaska, I think that, and I didn't have roots on the ground, I'd build myself a tiny home, and I would come park it here and say, hey, here is what I want to do, and this is my vision, and I want to be part of, you know, Chugach Farm in this way, and I'd say, let's network, and let's create something, and let's build something, and evolve.
Yeah, baby. You know, I like how you're thinking, and, you know, frankly, having looked at a bunch of different communities of young farmers around the country and explored kind of the dynamics and who got there first, and then their interns came, and then the interns fell in love, and then they started a farm nearby, and then, you know, pretty soon there's a blacksmith shop and a bakery and a coffee roaster, and there's people selling sausages, and, like, the thing kind of grows organically at its own pace based on the humans who bring the skills and the energy to develop that local economy. And, you know, you guys, when I met you, I thought immediately, you know, you just are one of those kind of firster types.
Mm. Hmm.
And so, anyway, I wish to help spread the word, and I know that you guys are spreading the word. And I felt definitely like, having come back from Alaska, so many people here on the mainland were like, what's the farm scene like in Alaska? What's the farm scene like in Alaska? Like, people want to know and haven't heard. So that feels good.
That's, yeah, and I really do think there's a lot of opportunity, and there's so many. The thing is we're all so disconnected from each other up here, so it's easy to feel alone, and it's hard to get to market, and there's so much opportunity for creating community and creating what's necessary in small communities, and taking the transportation aspect out of it. And, I mean, I could say right now at our market, you know, we need more people selling mushrooms and garlic and doing holistic forested livestock. And people could be growing, you know, more, quinoa, oats, amaranth. You know, all we have in Alaska, I mean, 95% of the food in Alaska is imported, 95%. So, I mean, it's incredible. And there was this guy, Ken Meter, you know him, who did the report, the Building Food Security,
yep,
in Alaska. And he said if Alaska wanted to ensure that its entire population could eat Alaska-grown produce, the state could set aside 4,700 acres for all the potatoes that would be needed, 200 acres for carrots, 200 more acres for cabbage, and 600 acres for lettuce. That's not really a lot.
Yeah.
You know, what I mentioned, that's way less than what is currently in coal leases that the state's getting $14 an acre for right now. So, you know, we need more young energy up here, people who are persistent and motivated and not going to wait around for, you know, subsidies and states to do this and that, because Alaska is totally in the hole, you know, being, you know, with a singular vision of making money off of oil, and that's kind of failed. So it's time to kind of resurrect that vision and create a different future. And I think that you know, send those people on up. There's a lot of opportunity.
Well, there's opportunity. There's water. The land is pretty cheap, and there's a lot of wilderness that's full of life. I think that people are likely to. I think the time is coming. I'm sending you a big hug. I wanted to give you a chance to make any announcements that you had about anything that's happening or coming up, or your groups that you want to tell people to check out. Meanwhile, I'm going to promote the Up Up Farm Film Festival, which is our cooperative film festival. Greenhorns is distributing out all over the world these beautiful films about young farmers and even some that are about intergenerational issues and land access and land drama. Beautiful films that don't usually get distribution but are so worth it. You can get your librarian in your town to buy the whole collection and then pass it all around to everyone. Better than Netflix, better than Amazon. Support the cooperative of young farmers. You got any announcements organized in your brain yet?
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little more about our... We'll have more information up soon about our community-supported ferments program. We are really into fermented food here, and we've been making fermented food for a long time. And so, like the CSA model, we're trying to promote that and share that. And we feel like it's a really good option and alternative as the climate changes, and we can't grow things when we thought we could, or you know, we just have shifts in kind of our old normal routine. And so by making fermented food, not only is it healthier and does it sustain us and better for our digestion, but we can store it in the root cellar longer and have it more available to help that kind of food security problem. So the fermented food, I'll put a big, put that out there, and also just another farm that I really like and has been a big inspiration to us has been Calypso Farm in Esther, Alaska, near Fairbanks, and they have really they've really kind of taken everything to a new level in terms of what's happening in Alaska with farm to school and their apprenticeship programs and stuff like that. So I'd check them out.
Calypso Farm, and I know they take interns too.
They do, but they've got a farmer training program that they're doing now, which is something that we really need more of in Alaska, is that, you know, that sort of trade school and a better system of passing down that knowledge so people are psyched and wanting to be farmers and wanting to provide for themselves in different ways.
I know there's also the Alaska Farmland Trust and the Alaska Food Policy Council, the Alaska Marine Resource Council that does awesome work in the community fishery department. I was just blown away eating this salmon that you guys make in your potted, I guess it's like potted salmon or something, like canned salmon in the glass.
Oh, yeah,
And the beautiful blueberries that you fermented in the glass. And, you know, frankly, really wanting to encourage young farmers down in the mainland who are running CSAs to partake in the bounty of this beautiful fish from this beautiful landscape. And, you know, if you can jigger it so that your customers are buying salmon and then the home team gets to eat salmon for free, I'd say it's worth doing a little bit of email clickety-click and corresponding with some of these fisher people up here, up in Alaska, because... it's worth getting it into your tummy, that's for damn sure.
Yeah. Yep, there's a lot of good stuff. We're still really really fortunate and really lucky to have so much of that at our fingertips.
Well, Allie, thank you. And thank you for your inspiration. And thank everyone for listening and for doing what you're doing. And I hope you're having a happy spring and that your onions are popping up and smiling at you.
Yeah, I'll just add, if you want more information, our website is Chugach Farm, C-H-U-G-A-C-H, farm.com. And we hope to gain some new followers and friends from the interview.
Woohoo, followers and friends. Keep it up. Bye-bye, everyone.
Okay, thanks, Severin.
Thank you.
Listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.